Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Good morning, good evening, good night, everybody. This is Woody Massey, the producer of the Jimmy Della Valle Brooklyn Buddha podcast, co-hosted by Tim Hummamune and a few appearances by myself. On today's episode, we had Vic Cohen. Vic has really carved a niche for himself in the world of comedy. He works with Halle Mandel very closely. He's been a writer on a couple gigs. He's on a new show with David Spade. He hosts an amazing podcast himself. You should go look that up. And he's just a really funny guy. One of the best sit-downs we've had so far. We ended up talking for about an hour and a half, and it's just great, interesting conversation. Jimmy's continuing his tour of the East Coast, folks. He just wrapped up a gig at Laughlin Casino. He's going to be out in the Syracuse area of New York. So if you are in the Northeast, go check him out. The dude's going to bring down the house. Well, I'm going to get out of here, folks. Check out Vic Cohen's podcast. Keep up with Jimmy Della Valle and JimmyDellaValle.com. And you guys have a great week.
Brooklyn Buddha.
So, as I always say, I'm excited to have my people, because I only bring you on if I know you or I know you through a friend. It's pretty rare. Like, one time I brought this one guy in from Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction. So I brought him Dwayne Whitaker. He's an amazing actor. I brought him on. But I only bring you on if I know you, I've met you. It's sometimes through referrals, but not all the time. I won't bring you. But this guy intrigues me. I've known this guy since moving out to Los Angeles, and we used to do shows together, and he was always a fan of mine. He had met my wife. He always, you know, was really cool, and I was a fan of his, and I liked his writing, and I just thought he was really an interesting character. And we fell out of touch with each other, and of course, Facebook got us back in touch with each other. I hit him up, and it took him like a little bit, I think a few days or maybe a week or whatever it was, to get back to me. And I was like, well, if this guy don't get back to me, he can go fuck himself. But, you know, just, and then he got back. He was like, Jimmy, oh my God. And then all of a sudden, me and Tim were at Panera. And I think we were writing the pilot. I think we were writing Not For Nothing back then. And he walks by and I'm like, hey, Vic. And he was like, oh my God. And next thing you know, we're talking to Vic Cohen, who's, you know, an amazing writer. He's worked with Howie Mandel on many projects. He has a hit documentary that I forgot the name of it. We'll let him tell us what it is. But it was just in Toronto at the festival. It's where Howie Mandel follows him around with cameras and stuff. And normally people are following around Howie Mandel, but they're following around Vic, because Vic is really an amazing guy. And Vic also has like this awesome podcast. It's called It's a Fair Question. And people know that I gamble, and I've been through the ringer and the whole gambling world, but he really opened me up on that. So if you guys want to check out his podcast, It's a Fair Question. It's great. You can just Google it, you know. And he's a comedian, he's a writer, and he's an actor, but also a great guy. But Woody, my producer's here.
Hello, hello.
And Tim, my great co-host.
Hello.
All right. These guys, they know two words. Hello, hello, hello. Anyways, without further ado, my friend, soon to be yours, Vic Cohen.
Jimmy, so great to be here. And thank you, Tim and Woody. First of all, I have to say, you are an incredible guest. I'm not just saying that because you're having me on the show. I mean, on my podcast, I mean, the way you opened up about just your personal life, I'm not going to give it away for all of you, but if you have a chance to check out that podcast, you're going to be really, you're going to see a side of Jimmy. I don't know how much you get deep here with some of your challenges at different times in life, but it was just beautiful. You helped a lot of people who listen to that. I mean, I've had great feedback from you as a guest.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, I open up, you know, I've helped a lot of people with it. I mean, I actually, you know, I still, I don't go crazy in the gambling world no more. I'll play some poker. People know I play at the Moose. I'm a Moose member. It reminds me of like playing with my father as a kid. They're all older guys, but they're famous, like Emmy-winning writers. Jay Moriarty, who was the head writer next to Norman Lear, he wrote for All in the Family, Good Times. I play poker with him every week, and we have a, it's a nice little family there. But it's not like drain the bank account.
So it's more like a. It's not so much gambling as like just camaraderie.
So Jimmy's saying is he's falling off the wagon.
Yeah.
But he's making it sound like it's business.
Yeah. No, it's funny because
it's
wife,
a guy from the Valley. It's not gambling. So, I mean, that money we put out every week. Yeah, no. These aren't cards.
Yeah. No.
Even though there's a king and a queen and a jack on some of them.
That's so funny because my wife, she said that again. She goes, it is still gambling. And I go, it's a form of entertainment. Tim actually has made that. Tim's like, look, I don't do anything but play the slots. That's my entertainment.
He's a 90-year-old. You're a white 90-year-old woman trapped
in seven slots. These are mine.
Tim, I was wondering why you're wearing white gloves. You're not in the slot machine.
That's hilarious. Tim is the fucking worst.
The cord.
Tim's the worst gambler ever. He has never...
No, wait, I think you are from the stories you told me.
No, because Tim's been with me where I've won $10,000, $20,000.
Oh, my God.
The money.
But that's when I hear that, I think how much the other side.
Oh, yeah, of course. But Tim was... I think he's only hit once or twice, but so many times he'll lose. Like, we're working in Vegas, and I go, how'd it go? I hit the machine.
I'm just waiting.
This is a true story. Wait, this is crazy. Okay, like years ago... Las Vegas used to be a lot better. Like 20 years ago, you'd go there and you can get a room for like $9 because they just wanted you there. Mm-hmm. You know, and it wasn't all this family entertainment stuff. It was basically hookers and gambling,
right?
And free drinks. So I was at the Golden Nugget downtown, which I love because the tables are lower.
Yeah,
you know, and I just get more gambling.
That's my new hangout.
I loved it. So, and this is before they fixed up downtown. Mm-hmm. So I lost to me a lot of money. It was like $300, mm-hmm. and I'm like, this is fucking bullshit. I'm going to get back at this fucking hotel. So I decided I'd do it through soaps. I went from the top fucking floor to the bottom, and I hit every maid cart and loaded myself up with soaps and shampoos. I'm walking in my car like this. They had to check it. They had to see it on the security
camera. Were they good soaps or the little
mini
chiclets?
No, this is the best part. I get back to my place back in L.A., and that fucking soap gave me a rash.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I had like 300 soaps in my cabinet, and I had to throw it out because, I mean, I was breaking out.
Too bad you weren't. You know who Jeff Parami is? Fat bastard. Jeff, he's a comedian who took those, and he put a... Well, he had a joke about it.
And he sells the soaps.
Sells the soaps with his joke around the soap.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Because he does a bit about having the soap and washing himself, but he's a big guy, so he wipes and then he loses the soap in his ass. He can't find it.
Yeah.
you know, it's funny. Tim does a bit in his act, which is, hopefully no one ever steals it. He needs to get it to TV. I keep telling him. He does a bit about the maids and stealing. He says that he checks into the room. He goes, you have to, you know, the maid has a chart. And you need to, first thing you got to do, because they chart, they say, you know, they have this many soaps in this room. He goes, first thing you do, steal the chart. So it's like, you know.
That's funny.
And then he checks into his room and he calls right down, right away. He goes, how dare you give me a room that doesn't have a TV? I need a new TV and a remote that works. Like, I love that.
That's
I love
really
the remote
funny.
That works, which I think is such a brilliant joke. And it never gets what it deserves.
It's a great joke because it's like a tag, but it's
a
also a real
tag.
Yeah, that's funny. That is really funny. Yeah. I never realized this till like recently. You know, when you stay at a hotel, you're supposed to, well, a lot of people say you're supposed to tip. You're supposed to leave a tip when you leave?
Well, because you're Jewish.
For the chicken.
Hey. Oh, really?
You know, my wife never fucking tipped.
Like, what's
for years, she's
I didn't
on the
know
road.
That. Like, what's the what are you supposed to give?
Dude,
I mean,
$1 a day. I usually do $1 a day. If it's funny because did you always tip or did I taught like Tommy Savitt, comedian Tommy Savitt. He would refuse. He wouldn't tip, and I go, you got a fucking tip. You get as a comedian, you young comedians, if you're listening, you have to tip your waitresses, your bartenders, and I don't give a shit. if they gave you bad service. It's not about that, because the owner might be fucking the waitress, cheating on his wife, whatever it is, and then she's sucking his cock later, and then she leans up, hey, you know, Vic Cohen didn't tip me. What? He's never coming back.
And I am an excellent tipper. I'm just saying this hotel thing was... I don't know how I never got the memo on that thing. Yeah. But
what do you mean? They got the big sign that says gratuities are accepted.
I didn't see that. I was staying in a really nice hotel in Toronto, and like the Ritz-Carlton, there was no sign saying
There's normally an envelope.
Is that?
I think those are the cheaper hotels that do that.
Really?
Like a Holiday Inn or Howard Johnson or
the cheaper
just leave it on the desk.
I think all of them have an envelope. There's usually an envelope.
Sometimes they do it.
Yeah.
Do I have to leave you a tip here? Yeah. Is that
you have to? What's the protocol? A lot of people bring me gifts. But just having you here and seeing your bald head is a gift.
Had I known, I would have brought maybe a Curious George or something, which you seem to be very into, or someone is.
It's a funny story about Curious George. People don't know, here in my studio, my bathroom is all
monkeys.
Okay, people come over and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you have monkeys all over. Right, so my wife gets me a Curious George painting. It's like somebody painted it or whatever. She's like, and that was like one of the first gifts she ever gave me as my girlfriend. And I'm like, it's all right. Like, I didn't care. She's like, what the fuck? You love monkeys, huh? I go, I never really liked Curious George. Like, right? And she's like, it doesn't even make sense. Like,
it's a weak monkey. Yeah. It's a weak monkey.
Yeah, yeah. He's like half retarded. Curious George, he's always... It's funny because my buddy Bill Cott, remember he went to my special... Remember Bill Cotty sat in the front, the big improv guy?
I don't remember. It was a great night, though. Yeah. But that I don't remember.
Well, yeah. Well, he was, he played Curious George's on the cartoon, the show that's on now. Who's Mr. Yellow Pants or whatever? He plays that guy. He's the voice.
Isn't that dangerous? Is that
just the man in the big yellow hat?
That's he it. Never had that's a name. It. That's him.
I have to be, well, I have to be honest. In that, you know, with all those monkeys around, I was tempted to throw my shit around.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous to have that in the bathroom. You know.
So let me ask you a question.
It's very messy.
So you,
good thing it's the bathroom, not the kitchen.
You have the bald head. When did you start shaving it? When did you start losing?
Well, I've been losing my hair forever, since my 20s. And I just... Yeah, I use like a clipper.
But you have a perfectly bald head. Like Tim has
like the moles.
The moles.
That well, that's like his worst. Problem. I mean, first of all, Tim, you got to change. Yeah. I mean, unless you're going for the nerd look on stage, that's fucking a mess. Now, I'm going to start with you right away. I think it's great for casting. I mean, you look like an everyday kind of guy. But if you actually want to get fucking laid, that's not working. You got to get a razor. You're totally in denial about your hair.
Tim's rolling in.
No, he gets more pussy.
Yeah, from online.
He's an online pussy master.
Really? Mm-hmm. Are you like a text?
Tim hangs out in the dark corners of the
I steal their chart. That's what I do.
He's in the bad neighborhoods.
Well, evidently, all his pictures are from eyebrows down.
Oh, yeah. I Photoshop a couple strands.
What are these animals looking like that you're sleeping
with? No, they're great. Tim has tons of pictures.
Some are good.
I have tons of pictures, too. That means shit. Anyone can get pictures.
No.
What do they really look like?
No, Tim does well.
What's your specialty?
Well, the good, the ugly, and the ugly. The good, the ugly, and the ugly.
Uglier.
You get laid a lot?
He does well. He does well.
I know why, because he's very quiet.
Well,
he's
mellow. Online, I'm a cyber pimp kind of, like I know how to work the tricks.
Right. I'm good with that, too. Yeah, the tricks. I think we've talked before. Did I fuck you?
Probably.
He is good.
You know, it's funny.
You were the guy on the other side of the glory hill?
Oh, I have this one girl that is an actress that I'm friends with, and she's gorgeous actress. And when she acts, she doesn't have the quick tongue that she has in Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
She cannot improv like that. But on Facebook, holy shit. I mean, I will tell my wife, I go, look at how fast. Like, if I post something, she's got like 10
quip,
comments.
Funny quip.
Holy shit, she's fast. Yeah. And I go, but she can't do it in front of the camera. Huh. Like, you know what I mean?
So that's sort of
that's
me.
Awkward.
Yeah, because like I'm kind of socially awkward when I meet girls, but online.
Socially retarded. Yeah, is I don't the like way I like to word, say it. Yeah. He says awkward.
No, no. So,
online, it's I obviously have more time to. I'm more of a writer, so I can write stuff. I can write about what a great guy I am.
No, I can see why.
That way.
No, yeah, I can see why you're good because you kind of have to rely on that.
Yeah.
No offense.
No, yeah,
but
it, yeah,
what
yeah,
I'm looking at isn't impressive.
Right.
So you've been forced to rely on your wit, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
No, well, Tim Tim is, you know, his wife, as he says, he took half his hair in the divorce. I mean,
you were married?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. To a gorgeous girl. Gorgeous Jewish girl.
Wow.
Jewish girl. As we say, what did Tim say? Tim goes, I think she was more... thought I was more famous than I was. And then when she found out, isn't that what it was?
I don't know. Something.
Like
she thought I was a business guy.
Yeah, it started.
I owned two stores. She didn't know that was eBay.
Yeah.
Craigslist selling
out of a studio apartment.
Girl Scout cookies.
Well, the thing about you is I would guess, and you don't have to answer this, obviously, but I think you probably have a very strong dark side. Like, I think you do a lot of crazy role playing.
That's what Craigslist is for.
I think you probably get into some really nasty, nasty shit.
Maybe in my head, but I'm too lazy.
No, the problem with Tim is...
I'd tie you up.
I've never been in a peer pressure situation. Tim is like in a peer pressure, like, Tim doesn't really drink, but you're like, you want a beer? All right. Like, he just, like he had sex with this one girl. She's biting him or scratching him. You know, what was it? That one girl, she was scratching you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he's like, so he says to Leia, she was scratching me. I go, well, tell her. Something. Nah, I don't know. I feel awkward. She's awkward. You're bleeding. Like, but he doesn't see, you know, it's peer pressure. He's like, okay, I guess, you know, I'll deal with it.
You still sing her?
Probably, yeah. I don't even know which one
can
that is.
That was my next question.
I don't know which one that was.
Oh, yeah.
You've that many?
Well, no.
Be careful, though, because there are a lot of problems with people catch, you know, getting venereal diseases. So don't give anyone anything.
No, yeah, you don't want to give anything.
Be careful, seriously, because I'm worried about those ladies.
I know. I wear a condom for them.
Good. You're wearing one right now. Good, as you should.
Not for safe sex, for fucking...
But yeah, there are all these outbreaks out there now.
Oh, you know, that's so, you know, Jesus Christ. Do you have a girlfriend now, Beck?
I don't, actually.
You had a girlfriend night or whatever.
I had this woman from the Ukraine.
Okay.
Or somewhere.
From the Ukraine.
She was...
mail order bride?
She was really... It was funny. Yeah. No, I met her.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't answer
too quickly.
No,
she was a Tinder girl. Oh, wait, she's a Plenty of Fish girl.
A Plenty of Fish.
And she's really nice. I hate to... I'll just share this. I made love up her behind.
Yeah.
And,
I've never heard anybody say...
No.
You always must say, I fucked her in the ass. He goes, I made love up her behind.
Well, I'm trying
that
to,
was classy.
In case there are any families
comes.
Or, you know, in the car on its road trip listening.
That's right.
Yeah.
I made love up her behind.
I did. I made love up her...
It says make love. Up the behind.
It was only from
her ass.
I don't know if it was like a European thing, but she was fine with it, you know. Before we actually had real sex, like this was the first time I had sex with her, and so I ended up with a urinary tract infection, and so did she, and that really ruins like the love, you know.
Well, you know, that's actually weird because when I was before I was married, I was a whore. All the girls know, they listen, they follow me. Fuck, they know. I was a complete whore, and I never got the urinary tract infection, but like my girlfriends would always get it from me. I think it carries it in the woman.
There is a connection there.
No, it carries it. No, like the woman has it. Like you get it from, but you don't. It doesn't affect us. It's not really affect like a woman. It affects.
Well, here's the thing. That's
called a UTI.
Right, right, right. Well, what's weird about it is that, which I thought was admirable and quite impressive, she didn't ask for any lubrication whatsoever. So I'm thinking either one, she just is very accommodating, or two, she doesn't know enough English to say get the fucking Vaseline because my ass is killing me.
Or three, she ate a Hot Pocket.
Right,
right. Stuff already.
But I mean, it was a fight to get in.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm speaking for my penis, not for the rest. You know, I mean.
Do you have a thick penis?
Yeah, no, not really. It's a, you know, I'm a grower more than a shower.
Not a shower.
Yeah.
It's a handsome penis.
It's really nice. You want to see it? I've got lots of. You know, the thing about dick pics is you got to erase them afterwards. It's really easy to forget. And you're like showing someone your shit, and you're like, here's a picture of my mom, here's my dad, and.
That's my dick.
Whoa! Yeah.
You know, I've never. I mean, that was not the thing. The dick pics when I was coming up. I mean, you know, I would draw it on the Etch a Sketch, but that was about it.
His dick is camera shot.
But yeah. But. Tim, you've never sent a dick pic?
I'm old school. I use a scanner.
Enlarge. That's funny.
Yeah, I don't know if I could do that. I've sat in the bed, laid, and took a picture. And then my wife's like, erase that. And I'm like, of course I'm not going to send it. But, like, it's funny because we have it, like, my pictures in my phone because of... some idiot that worked at the Sprint store set it up so it goes right up to Google Plus now. All my pictures, so I have to go into my computer and then delete it. And
there's turn that off.
There's a way to shoot a dick pic where you're not in it, and that's to grab a pic of someone else's dick. No. Take a picture. You never have your face in the shot.
Right. Well, never. I
usually just send a black one.
No. Well, yeah. Well, the problem with using the black one is you have to use three phones. It's fucking.
There are ways to do it.
Are you about to show us your dick pic?
Yes.
Tim is showing. We're going to post it on jimmydelavalley.automatic.com. Oh, yeah, that's so fucking funny.
That's not what you want to hear when someone says, that's so fucking funny. But it is.
You have no idea how funny that is because you know who that is? Like, look, I'm not gay, but I know whose dick that is. That's fucking...
Oh, that's David.
David.
Yeah.
David, the famous...
Oh, that's funny. That's he's wearing a... By the way, he's wearing an apron.
He's wearing...
Yeah, it's so funny.
Or my other one is... I have in big letters, it says, my dick, and I took a picture of it, so I send that to girls just to be an asshole. And again, it's all black, too, so it's my big black dick.
That's great. That's funny.
So good. So Vic, you came out to Hollywood many, many years ago.
Yes, by covered wagon.
Yes,
it was different.
Covered wagon.
There was no Ventura Freeway. It was crazy. You think traffic was bad? It was rough.
So you moved...
91 I came
You ever
out.
Been in a four-carriage pileup?
It's not fun.
Very
so,
fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not... Yeah, it was 91.
Did you come out here to be an actor?
Actor, writer. Yeah.
Okay. And you had a full head of hair? At the
I
most
did, yes.
of hair that you
yeah.
could have.
Basically, I'd gone...
I've seen those pictures.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I've done undergrad... I did undergrad in Indiana in Bloomington, then I went and got a master's degree in journalism from Northwestern and was planning to be a TV reporter, and I did that for about a year.
I saw some of that stuff on your reel where you were a reporter. Yeah,
yeah, I did that in Macon, Georgia at an NBC station. And then I had a really bad... Like, I have Crohn's disease, and I got this crazy attack that was really...
True.
Now it's fine, but back then, it really kind of messed me up. I mean, I had to get major surgery, and then in the surgery, they found out I needed a colostomy, which is like where you got a bag on the side. That was a surprise. Then they reversed it, so there is no bag. I'm done. Thank God. I'm all reconnected. And then I get back to the job, which they helped for me, and I got in a horrible car accident where I could have died. And that was all within 9 months. And I was like, you know, I need to get out of Georgia while I'm alive.
You should get a carriage with airbags.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was very traumatic. And I just actually did some work on that. I went to a therapist because I feel like the trauma. There's a great type of therapy. I don't know if you guys are aware of it, called EMDR. And it's basically, specifically, they discovered it's for people who have been through war and other kind of trauma, car accidents, any kind of trauma. We've all had it. Some type of trauma, you know. And... And basically, it's like that. You use this thing where you like I hold these things in my hand, like, and then the therapist like operates this machine, and the paddles vibrate from right to, you know. And then she has me close my eyes, and the idea is that in talk therapy, we only can access one part of our brain, but this type of therapy with this vibrating thing, it accesses a part of the brain where trauma is stored. So it allows me to get into the trauma and to.
Do you get like emotional from it?
You can. I don't know. I'm getting emotional now. But yeah. You can because it's like the mind's kind of healing itself. It's a really fascinating... I highly recommend it to any of you guys. But anyways, Yeah, so I was like, I really need to change the course of my life. I wanted to, I've always loved comedy. I wanted to work in comedy. And so I moved out here after recovering after that car accident. Mm. And, you know, and it's been great. My plan was I wanted to stay in Los Angeles. I think there's something about staying in one place that just for networking and career, you know, I just didn't want to be running around everywhere. And I was talking to someone recently, actually a previous guest of yours, you know, like if you stay in a city outside of LA, it's very easy to get entrenched in that city. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, time is so valuable. I want to be spending it around people that are so like-minded and with similar goals, mm-hmm. where we can get to the next level together.
Right.
You know, even Chicago, there's kind of a limit. You know, you're going to do industrial videos. You'll maybe mm-hmm. do some clubs in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You might do the Midwest. But you're not going to be seen by casting directors or working with people that are going to put you on television or film.
Right.
Not like you can here.
Do you have an agent or is everything word of mouth?
I do have an agent right now. It's quite interesting. Howie Mandel's wife, 3 or 4 years ago, opened up a talent agency with a partner. And she's known my work forever.
Right.
Literally since 98. And mm-hmm. so she's like, you know, I'm opening this agency and I'd love for you to be. She might have said this to everyone, but like, you're my first client. So she and Jan Rosenthal, her partner, have been doing my theatrical.
Are you going out auditioning?
You know, it's like hit and miss. It's weird. It's like.
It's very slow. I mean, I normally, for years, was auditioning every day. And then I just, you know, I'm still auditioning. I did a big voiceover audition earlier. But it's not the same as like every day no more because non-union is ruining, it's kind of ruining the business.
Well, what happened
that's
was
that's why we're lucky to be able to do stand up or sure. get a writing gig, which is going to be pay.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, what happened was, in my opinion, is like there was a big commercial strike, and mm-hmm. like I think it was probably even in the late 90s, early mm-hmm. 2000s.
It's when I first got my SAG card. Yeah. It was a fucking strike.
And so before that strike, I was going out all the time, mm-hmm. SAG and everything. Then there was the strike, and the actors union was holding out for more money for commercial actors. Mm-hmm. And then these advertising agencies and production companies, and they're like, well, let's go non-union. Mm. And they found that they could get close, if not what they want, paying non-union. So mm-hmm. I think it really hurt, you know, and I think nothing's really, I think it's changed everything.
Yeah, no, I did a Pepsi commercial before, and then... I'm not 100% sure, but I think the Pepsi might be non-union now. MasterCard's non-union. It's like these things that were always union, they always had union contracts, union, and now they're fucking non-union. You're like, Jesus Christ. I mean, it's brutal.
Yeah, and I only do union stuff. I mean,
yeah, of course.
You know, I'm not going to take a national anthem.
Like, we shot our pilot, Not For Nothing, stars me, Tim, Shelley Desai, and Jerry Houck, and Eddie Velez directed it. It's all union. I mean, I went through SAG, Screen Actors Guild, sent the contracts, everything.
Yeah.
I would not do the non-union.
And, you know, the issue is, you know, I hear a lot of union guys doing non-union. And it's hard for the union to crack down on them because if you're going, look, you know, the reason why you're doing non-union is because you can't get union work. Well, we're going to get you out of the union. Well, that just means you're going to get work. You know, like they don't have the upper hand now because there's not as much union work. Right. As what's hurts the union.
Mm. Well, here's where I see things. As I was driving over here, I was feeling, I've always felt this, but I was feeling very psychic, particularly about this man, Jimmy. Here's where I see you. I've thought about your career as I was driving over here. Mm. I see you as a star on either a sitcom. I see you having a breakout role in a film. I think mm-hmm. that's where you're going to, and I think everything is going to go from there on out because you're a great character actor. Or lead. You got a great, that Italian thing mm-hmm. is just real. It's who you are. It's not even acting, really. Mm-hmm. Or it's a heightened version of yourself. Mm-hmm. You're engaging, interesting, and you work your ass off. You know, like you can have great talent, but if you're not working at it, like trying to get mm-hmm. the work, you're the best kept secret in the world. Doesn't mm-hmm. mean shit. But you're an excellent like business guy in that regard. You know, and you've got a passion mm-hmm. that's real.
Yeah.
So I give it, I don't know how long, but that's where I see it. You can be like that guy. Who's the comedian who's on CSI or Bells?
What's Richard Belzer.
SVU, yeah.
I could see you, like, your career taking that trajectory where it's like, yeah, he's a stand-up and he does stand-up, but I could see you just going and, you know, being a full-fledged dramatic actor.
You know, thank you. I appreciate it. I just signed with a new manager with, well, Russell.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
A
yeah.
brand new manager?
Well, yeah, because Russell Best is my, of Best Entertainment Group. He's out of North Carolina and New York. And
that's great. North Carolina is where it's at. You know, every...
No. No.
Yeah, I could see why you might have changed that.
No.
I got a great agent in Panorama City.
Yeah, that's
the
hilarious.
The manager's fantastic.
No, Russell Best is...
Anytime you got to name your best,
that's
I'm getting suspicious.
Yeah,
I'm Russell Best.
Russell
you
know, is
I'll never
amazing.
Work with this guy. He's
that,
like, fuck
that's
you.
That's fucking hilarious. No, Russell is... he is a guy who sat down with me, and we sat and we talked about, like, how am I on stage? What's making me tick? Like, I'll go back and forth, and, like, Tim or my wife will videotape me, and he'll say, just talk to the camera. Let's talk about what you're doing on stage. You know, so then I'll send it to him in an email or something, and he's like, look, I don't want you going on stage no more with, like, a T-shirt or whatever. He's like, I want you to dress like you. Because, you know, he goes, like, I'm a good-looking, chubby guy. He goes, go on stage. Make the girls want to fuck you. Make the guys want to hang out with you. So I started doing that, and so I'm headlining a theater in Arizona. And places, like, sold out. And my opening act goes, what the fuck? Like, after the show, there's, like, a line out the door to meet me and take pictures with me. Then we're in New Mexico, same thing. Then and I'm like, so I call Russell. I said, holy shit, I can't believe this. Like, that was, like, such a great note that he gave me that I never knew before.
I totally agree. And when I perform, I'm wearing a sport coat.
Yeah.
I'm wearing, like, something that basically, we're a brand.
Right.
So it's like, how do I want to market my brand?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look at a Pepsi can or a Coca-Cola can or anything. I mean, that's what we are. Ultimately.
Yeah.
And people make snap judgments. And for me, I don't want to look like I just rolled out of bed and onto stage. I don't feel it's really, for me. I mean, there are other, like, A-list actors or comics who wear jeans and a T-shirt, and that works for them fine. But if you ever read the biography Steve Martin wrote, Born Standing.
Yeah, I got it. I got the book.
Okay,
yeah.
So he talked, which I thought was fascinating. You know, he was known for wearing a white suit.
Mm-hmm.
But that only came, do you remember why he wore a white suit? Because I'll
it's
tell you,
wild
why.
And crazy. No,
because he was doing arenas,
right?
And he wanted people in the back to be able to see him.
No, it's a great idea.
You know?
Yeah,
but
I remember that.
But that became a signature of his in a way, you know. And I also, there's kind of like a respect. I think, you know, people are spending part of their evening, some of paying their money to come and see you. They can do a lot of things.
Yeah, that's why you see these young comics that come up in shorts and disheveled shirt with food stains and.
Unless that's your bit. I'm the lazy bum who sleeps in mom's house.
Mm-hmm.
I sleep in a van.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, thanks for waking me up, everyone. You know, I'm going back to bed after this.
Right.
Then that totally works.
Yeah, there's like a comedian, Greg Vaccarello, who I used to open for. I don't know if you know Greg. He's a bald comedian. Always dressed really good. So, like, I would be featuring for him, and he would tell me, this is back in Long Island, and he would go, he goes, you got to look just a little bit better than the audience. So, like, every picture you ever see, like, if he's on a cruise or whatever, or he's doing a comedy club, he's always got, like, either a nice, really nice iron shirt, nice jeans, or he's got a suit coat with a nice, he just always looks really sharp. Always. Another guy, a good friend of mine, the famous comedian, who's not a star but should be, Tony Woods. Tony Woods always looks amazing.
Well, it's like a...
You know who Tony Woods is? He's got the hat. He's one of the guys who...
He's the guy who wears the tux, right?
Well, no, he started...
the top hat.
You know, when Chappelle started, Tony Woods took him under his wing and really taught him.
That's like our friend, a guy, Chris Monty.
Chris Monty.
He always suit with a hat.
Yeah.
It's like a Frank Sinatra kind of...
Uh-huh.
But what he likes is that he likes how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point for me. I forgot the name, but I know in England there was a type of acting, like, there's, like, you know, there's the Stanislavski and there's this and that and Meisner, but there's one end where actors, they when they put on the costume, it takes over. You know, they become the role.
Right.
And I get that. Like when I'm dressed to perform, it just feels like there's going to be something different happening versus me just going up to Subway.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. Like Sebastian Maniscalco, he dresses up now. You know, Sebastian's a really top Italian comic from Chicago, and he's like built that brand in town. Now he's of course he's headlining, but he's like selling out clubs, theaters. It's like they're coming to see you, and it's not like you're better than them, but the audience is kind of like, they look at you and they go, well, that's a star. He looks like a star. Like, I do a joke in my act about, my manager was like, look, you're on this show, you're on that. He goes, move to L.A. because you got the look. And I guess I do, because the director's like, look, you're not right for the part. You know, that's a joke that I say, but it's the look. It really is the look. Like, I just had a comedian, Ron Jossel, here, and I said, look, you have a great look. And I couldn't click in my mind, but then he said, yeah. He goes, I look like the low-budget Rock. And I go, you do. I go, but that fucking low-budget Rock is going to work. You know, I mean, if he gets off the road, he's on the road 45 weeks a year. Yeah. He wants to no longer do that.
What scares me about, like, I've never committed to doing the road. And what kind of, for one reason, a lot of times I'm
on. But you have been committed.
Many times, just here in L.A. But never on the road. That's funny. Yeah. First of all, I like being in town in case there's like auditions, and also for my writing jobs, it's hard to, you can't just walk off a show and start hitting the road. But I think that there's a road audience is just a little different, you know, from my sense, just being what I've experienced. And I don't know, I kind of like more of a city crowd, or, you know.
You know, you can only go so far with that, I guess the Los Angeles mentality of the LA comic, you know what I mean? Like, you might not be able to go, like, you could have a killer act, you're running around LA, going to the Laugh Factory, the Ice House, and you're just killing every single night. And then you go to Texas, and then they're not feeling Uber. They're not feeling your 10 minutes on Uber that murders. You know what I mean? Normally.
Right.
So, like, me and Tim were doing a show the other day, and he comes out with jokes about New York. They don't really know the New York thing. And he knew instantly when he opened his mouth, holy shit, he shouldn't have did the New York bit.
Right.
The bit's an awesome bit. It kills everywhere. But this place, it wasn't going to kill.
Sometimes, what I find is really interesting is I think a great comic knows the joke not to tell.
Yeah.
You know, because even if, like, there are great jokes, but for that audience, or let's say I don't want to be known as a filthy comic, if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great joke, but perhaps it's not going to be the right joke for my brand.
Right.
Or my audience.
Completely.
Oh, that's funny, yeah, because what happened was I wasn't going to do that material, but the MC had, his whole thing was, he's from New York, New York, New York, New York. Like,
that don't say where it was.
Yeah, so that was my...
It was New York.
...intro. So in my head, I go, oh, maybe I should do a New York joke place. And then, I knew instinctively that, it wasn't working, so I just...
Don't say the place.
Yeah.
Don't say Denny's.
The place. That's the name of it.
IHOP.
Don't say the place.
Denny's. IHOP Camarillo.
So... You've worked with Howie Mandel. You guys have been close friends, good friends. What do you consider your friendship?
Lovers? No.
Can you touch him without gloves?
I've never shaken his hand. But
you've never shaken his hand?
Maybe like in 98. I don't remember shaking his hand.
Shake hands, right?
Can you put Purell on and go, boom, let's do it?
No. But he's a wonderful kisser. Yeah. I gotta say. And his lips are like butter.
What does his wife say about that?
Well, here's the deal. Okay, no. Howie's whole thing is about the palm of the hand. So, like, he could, I'm assuming, do anything else that any man would do with a woman. You can, even you, Tim. But the touching of the hand, it's the palm. So that's really his whole thing.
That's why he does something with the elbow. Right. He does
the fist bump, and I've told him, and I thought this would have stopped it, but it didn't. Yeah. And think about it. When you wipe your nose, or when someone wipes their nose, how do they do that? They take their fist,
mm-hmm.
and they do that. So
right.
he's basically contaminating himself, in my mind, every
right.
time he fist bumps.
Right.
It's a bad strategy.
So when did you get into that whole, as I call it, my team? Like, Tim is in my team. My
right.
team, Kevin Hart has his team. You're on Howie's team.
Right.
Howie's not going to do a show without calling you and say, hey, Vic, I'm thinking about doing this.
Well, I'll tell you this. He is very kind and generous and thoughtful when he's doing a show. I
right.
can't say I do every show. Like, America's Got Talent, it's not his show.
Right.
You know? I mean, he's a host, and
uh-huh.
people think of him in that way.
Right.
But, yeah, he does. He's been great about thinking about me and inviting me into most of his projects. And I think that what happened was, well, basically, I do know what happened as far as in the early stages. He had a talk show. It was a daytime talk show on Paramount. It was a syndicated show
mm-hmm.
called, coincidentally, The Howie Mandel Show. Well named. He was perfect for the part.
Right.
So I heard about it, and I called him up. Well, not him, but I called the show. And said, I'd love to be a writer on the show. At this point, I'd been writing on some game shows, and
mm-hmm.
I had some credits. And they said, we're doing a writing test for writers. So here's the test. They called me back, write 25 jokes in 24 hours. And here's two celebrities, as if we have them as guests. Write five questions Howie would ask. So I did that. And then they said, okay, great. Next day, like, great, we'll call you back. There's going to be a second test. Call me back. Second test, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sent it in. Said, Howie wants to meet you. Came in, met him. And my feeling is, the way I like to do things is, I think it's better to, instead of saying you can do something, just do it. Like,
mm-hmm.
instead of saying, oh, I can be really funny,
mm-hmm.
or I can really come up with great stuff, just come up with it. Bring
right.
it. You know, so
mm-hmm.
I went and brought him more stuff in that meeting.
Show me.
He didn't ask me to, but,
me.
You know, I wanted to show him what I could do, and this is a
yeah.
great moment. I never met the guy. I thought he was hilarious. I mean, you know, he has some of his bits I've always loved. So he was like a kid in a candy store showing me around the studio. He said, this is where I used to go and watch Carson, because his stage was where Carson used to do his
wow.
show at NBC.
Wow.
He'd be pointing to these seats. He's like, you know, when I'd come in from Toronto, I'd be sitting in these seats in this audience. I mean, it was a very big deal for him career-wise. And and he wasn't, you know, shy about sharing that. And it was really exciting because I'm like, you know, he doesn't know me. Why is he, you know, this is great that he's being so generous with sharing, you know, how excited he is. So we finished that interview and I left, and then I stayed in touch with his producer and / road manager. And then finally I got a call, and this guy called me, his road manager from Detroit, Howie was on the road, and he said Howie would like to hire you to be a writer on a show. They're only hiring five guys. Or, you know, it turns out there were guys, five people. And, you know, some of the others did have connections.
Who were the other writers?
One of them was Michael Platt. Michael's
okay.
a great guy. He runs shows with his partner,
mm-hmm.
is a showrunner type guy. There was another guy, Hal Speer. Really
sure.
funny
and
guy.
He passed away, right?
And he died.
Yeah.
And Hal was like
he
such
was
a
great.
Wonderful, like
he
amazing.
He was like the head writer of Arsenio.
He
right?
worked, yeah. And, you know, like Chicky.
Yeah, he was amazing.
The nicest guy. I mean, the fact that guy died.
He came back doing stand-up and then died.
He was like 50. He moved to Vegas.
It was all long out, right?
Yeah, the problem with Hal is Vegas was a dangerous place for him, I think.
Mm.
You know, with all the partying and
yeah.
all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what an amazing guy. Great heart. And then there was two other guys. Ray... I'm forgetting their names. There are two other guys. One guy's a big writer on Leno. And
Jack Cohn?
No. And then the other guy, I don't know, it was weird. He was a blonde kid. Ray, if it hits me. Oh, Rob Raymond.
Okay.
Do you know Rob Raymond?
No.
Yeah. And then who's the other guy?
You know, I was looking at Saturday Night Live the other day and going, wow, like, a lot of these guys aren't even comics. Like, I looked at, like, 20 or 30 writers and go, they're not even comics. These are fucking straight-up writers that came out of, like, Harvard, Yale, or, you know, whatever.
Or improv. Or,
yeah, whatever yeah. it is. They're not fucking stand-up comics. They're
yeah.
not known. Like, out of 30, maybe three were
it's,
writers. I'm like,
yeah.
holy shit. Or comics.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, they didn't take a lot of comics. like they took it early on, but as improv grew, like it's been more and more improv.
It seems like it's like Groundlings and Improv Olympic and UCB and that's been the fertile ground for years now.
It's
an interesting thing. Like, you know, I really feel grateful that I do know how to write, like in a way for TV. I mean, because it pays, you know? I mean, if I'm going to work in the business...
Are I'd you like in the Writers Guild?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it gives me an opportunity to work with really cool
people. Were you in the Writers Guild before the Howie?
No.
So
I had a join from that show. Nice. So that was a really... Yeah, and so then after that experience... I wanted to be on camera, like doing some hidden camera stuff. So I pitched him some ideas, and he said, "Okay, and we'll try it." And then I became a regular on camera. And then during that period, we just really had a great connection. He was like, "You know, I was just getting divorced, and he thought it'd be interesting to follow me around because he'd heard about some of my crazy auditions." And he's like, "Why don't we do a film? We'll, you know, document you." And so I traveled around with him, which was amazing. You know, on the road, I did some stuff on stage with him.
What are you doing? Were you opening for him?
No, I wasn't. Hal was.
Okay, that's...
Hal was his opener. And then I would do bits with, you know, I'd show up on stage and kind of crash his stage sometime, improv and that kind of thing.
I love Howie Mandel, but I hated him for so long until Deal or No Deal.
Yeah.
Because I was uneducated. I did not know about his germaphobe. Mm-hmm. So I'm at Foxwoods Casino. And he kills, and he doesn't come out and talk to the audience. Nothing. He doesn't come. Mm-hmm. You don't get to meet him. I buy a ticket to the next show. He doesn't come out. I'm like, this motherfucker. I'm a new comic. I can't believe. All I want to do was meet him. You know what I mean? And I was so upset for so many years. And then I found out about his germaphobe, and I was like, oh, that's what it was. Because, I mean, and it wasn't just me. There were people. I mean, there were lines out the doors that wanted to meet him, and he wouldn't.
When I told him I was doing your, well, it's funny you say that because when I told him I was doing your show, he wanted to apologize for that. Evidently, at the time, he had a personal grudge against you because you weren't seeing all his shows.
I wasn't watching them all.
You didn't get the VIP.
But I remember I was gambling at Foxwoods Casino, and I was like, boom, let me get this ticket. And then and I just loved him, and I was like, let me get the next show. I saw both shows. He didn't come out. And does he do that now? Does he go? He has to. He won't come out.
Well, I don't think it's, you know, here's the deal. Like, I don't know. You know, I don't know. You know, like a lot of A-list comics, I mean, they leave.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Like, have you seen, like, do most of the comics you see who are like.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people now.
Yeah. A lot of people. Well, it's almost like part of their. Contract with the club or theater now that they have to do a
he'll do meet and greets, but they're like controlled.
A controlled
meet. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't want to speak for him, but it seems like maybe it's changed. I haven't been out with him in a while.
I mean, dude, this was in the 90s. This is when I first had started. I remember.
I came out.
But I love him.
He's very good.
I was out here about 20 years ago, and my friend John Mulrooney got me a spot. He was doing well at the store, so he goes, let me talk to Mitzi, get you a spot for Mitzi. And I'm about to go on, and Howie shows up and just destroys. Standing ovation, half hour. And afterwards, he gets off, and I want to go to talk to him and say I'm next. And, you know, it was an honor to, you know, I enjoyed him. And Mitzi looks at me and goes, come on, Howie. Like, she took him away from me. Oh, I don't want this peon comic talking to him. Then I go, let's go talk over there.
I'm just going to protect him.
And then I just ate it, and Mitzi, you know, didn't give a shit.
That's really good.
It's been all downhill.
But he's a really, he's a really good guy, and I'm sorry that you had that that feeling about it, because it's
just as a young comic, it made me so upset, you know. But then when I saw the whole thing, I was like, oh, and then I saw him on the interviews again. I mean, when I first saw him do stand-up, I was like, this guy's so good. And his audience, I mean, because I pride myself in being quick. I mean, you've seen me off the audience. And I just thought he was the king. I thought nobody could touch
him. He's excellent. And, he does a bit that it was an HBO special.
And he's not pre-planned, right? I mean, I'm not pre-planned.
I don't think he's pre-planned. I mean, but I will say this. You know, there's only so many situations.
Right.
I mean, you're doing comedy 100, 200 times a year.
Right, right.
And you're working in the room, and, you know, there are only so many careers.
Sure.
I mean, what I think makes a great comic, among many things, is that the audience has an experience as if it's happening for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And he has that ability.
Yeah.
And then you think it's really, you know, whether it is or isn't.
Mm.
You know, like,
what's great about him is when I've seen him perform, that he's so not only does he play with the audience and has material, but he's so innocent, likable, so he can tease you and you can still laugh at it. He's not one of those
right.
aggressive, you know, abusive comics
mm-mm.
that you're like, oh, he's ripping on me just for the laughs. He's actually like, he's
having fun with
fun.
You
yeah.
you're laughing together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right.
Definitely.
So enough about the great Howie Mandel. I want to talk about Vic Cohen. So, Vic, so you have your podcast, and you did 50, 60 episodes, whatever it is. Are you still doing it weekly?
Yeah, I'm not doing it weekly, but I'm still doing it.
Have you had any guests that have changed your way? Of course, I know you said me, but anyone else? Like, have you had anything? Like, I just had Rajiv Satyal.
Spell that.
Satyal, right? So I just had him on 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And a good friend and a great, great comic who's really blown up. But so he's performing. Like, has your comedy changed the lives of anyone? Because, like, the other day he's performing and then all of a sudden Deepak Chopra was in the audience and comes up, I would like you to do a one-on-one interview with me. So he did. He got to interview Deepak Chopra like a few weeks later.
Wow.
So
from a podcast?
No, he was just doing stand-up.
Oh, where was that?
In San Diego.
Wow.
So he went down to like the, what do they call it, the compound, like Deepak Chopra. You know,
Deepak Land.
Fucking amazing, yes. Right? Yeah, Deepak Land, like, right? So have you had any of those things where like you're, you know, you asked me to do a podcast. Well, yeah, great. Like, I get mad at people, like if I ask them, or they don't take my podcast seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people are like, oh yeah, you know, I can't do it this week, you know, maybe we can do it next week. No, I'm asking you this week. I can't do next week. I'm already booked.
Right.
I already have something. Like, I want them to respect this. I know it's not my own TV show, but I like to run it in a professional way. I want my guests to have a good time. I'm a businessman. I want you to my fans to find out who Vic Cohen is. Most likely my fans would never find out who Vic Cohen is. Now they're going to know.
Yeah, yeah, well, thanks for having me.
You know, so
and thank you fans for finding
yeah.
me.
Yeah. So,
VicCohen.com.
So yeah, yeah.
And I take any friends on Facebook.
Is there anything you want to plug?
Address.
I'm very lonely.
Yeah. So you have a
no,
Vic.
Unless it's I love you.
Is there a Vic Cohen?
I think I
what do you want to plug?
I want to plug you, baby.
Okay.
No, that's not true. Tim, I want to plug Tim.
Yeah.
No, it's Woody. Actually, no, it's not true.
You would if you could.
And I can. And I can. And I can. Well, you know, I would love for people to check out my stuff online.
Okay.
And, yeah, I think the podcast would be great. Check out my show. I'm on a show that David Spade's doing called Fameless, F-A-M-E-L-E-S-S.
Okay.
And the podcast, love for you guys to subscribe. It's on YouTube. It's on iTunes. And regarding the some episodes I think would be really interesting for people to take a listen to, besides the episode with you, Jimmy, was the show is done by Skid Row. And one of my goals was I always wanted to take a homeless person right off Skid Row and bring them right in the studio.
Right.
No pre-interview. And that's one of my favorite interviews as well. So you just look homeless. I brought this guy up, and it was fascinating.
You brought a homeless guy in?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
And it was incredible. Just because he revealed so much of himself and his addiction, and so much the denial was incredible.
Mm.
I asked him, I said to him, he revealed he had no teeth. I didn't know that until
mm-hmm.
two-thirds of the way. I'm like,
until he was blowing you.
No, until after. I'm like, that was amazing. What's your secret?
I go, what toothpaste do you use?
Yeah, I go, what you? I go, you have no teeth. I just realized. I goes, does that make you sad? Like, that would make me sad not having
mm-hmm.
teeth. He goes, no, I mean, like, you've understood everything I've said. I'm
right.
Like, well, yeah, but that's not really the point. The point
it's
is you're missing
eating,
your fucking teeth.
You know,
But
a lot of milkshakes.
That episode's really fascinating. And there was also one when Philip Seymour Hoffman had passed away. Mm-hmm. I was really curious about heroin addiction and what happened there, because I know nothing about heroin addiction. Mm-hmm. So I went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, NA, Narcotics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. Sat in the room, learned a little. I asked the guys, I'm like, who would be a good person to talk to? They led me to this guy who's a sober coach, mm-hmm. who's a former heroin addict. And the stuff he shared with me about heroin addiction just blew me away.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's so sad. I mean, addiction is such a brutal, look how many great people it's stolen, mm-hmm. you know.
One of my close friends growing up, he ended up having to go to rehab for heroin addiction. He was a musician, and we were sitting down having coffee once, and I asked him, I was like, well, what's the appeal? And he literally, like, you saw it, like, he looked away, like, he entered a monologue, and, like, his eyes faded away, and he just broke down the process of, like, it's like your hand starts to shake because your body knows what it's about to go through, and, like, it is intense, man. The fact that even Hedberg could go on stage and be that great and aware of himself and stand up and be that addicted,
asked the guy, he said to me that he would shoot up in his neck. Mm-hmm. And they're like, how can you shoot up in your neck? And his answer will never leave me. His answer was, how can you not?
This isn't the homeless guy.
This is the show about Philip Seymour Hoffman's passing.
Oh.
Yeah. And I found that episode to be really chilling. And there's a lot of great ones. There's Claudia from the Housewives of Atlanta. Do you know her? Claudia Jordan. She was also incredibly great as a guest.
She black?
Yeah. And she was also on The Apprentice. She's really cool. And this was really great. She sued Bob Barker, the show, for sexual harassment when she was a model on that show.
Wait, is this?
Years ago. And she was also a Deal or No Deal model. And so
it's not Kenya.
No. And like on the, no. On the
Kendra?
Show.
No.
No, no.
I don't know this
Claudia. Yeah, Claudia Jordan. And, I asked her, like, you know, because the show's called It's a Fair Question, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm like, how much did you get for that, you know, for getting slapped in the ass?
Okay.
If I could tell you what, but she wouldn't tell me exactly, but I got a good idea out of her.
Yeah.
Was he notorious? Because
I have no idea.
He was fucking a lot of
I don't
girls.
Even know if he was the one in the suit or if it was just the show.
Oh, I see.
Wow.
And then one other one was a woman, Katie Cleary, Cleary. Mm-hmm. This interview, I had her on. She was one of the Deal or No Deal models. And, you know, one of my most fun jobs was on that show was I was the writer for the show. And it was like 4 years of just constant.
Were you writing just questions?
I would write a lot of the stuff the banker
had
offers. No, like the banker offers. There were joke offers and jokes that would come out. And then also I would go over the contestants with Howie and share with him some funny ideas and things, you know, like. I mean, Howie's great on his own, but on any show, you always want to have someone to mm-hmm. throw ideas out mm-hmm. and, you know, just
spice it up.
Yeah, so, and I got to do that for 4 years, and it was amazing. And one of the models was this woman, Katie Cleary. Had her on the show. Her husband was there, and really good-looking guy. And this blew me away. I mean, this guy, like, Woody, you'd want to fuck him. And I know you don't fuck guys.
Mm. Only on Tuesdays.
No, this guy was, like, had it all. Gray-looking guy, supermodel wife, good-looking model wife, not a supermodel. You know, he had everything, the big house, the money, the car, da-da-da. So Katie brings him in just because he's a nice guy and wants to be with his wife, and it's not a great neighborhood. And it's really sweet. He brought her food before the show. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this adorable couple, and you're like, God, well, I want that. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I teased him because she's really into animals, and all she was talking about were saving this and saving that. And I said to him, like, listen, I said, or you know, the only animal you need to save right now is him. And I pointed at him through the glass, and I'm like, you know, this guy is the one you need to take care of. And I was saying it half joking. I wasn't trying to be a dick about it, you know. And then I brought him in, and they're talking, and she's like, why can you say that? You know, you can say this, Vic. If I say any of this, I get shit, you know.
Right.
And then there was a tragedy about a year later. He killed himself.
Wow.
Jeez.
And, you know, it was like, there's a great saying I like, you know, comparing my insides to other people's outsides.
Mm.
It's a common thing. And if I do that, I really end up being depressed flat mm-hmm. out. Like, it could be about anything. You know, like, I see, it could be someone in a career that, like, they're further along in some way. And I could mm-hmm. be like, you know, oh wow, compared to that, I'm in a bad place. I'm not right. in the right place. I should be blah blah blah. You know, comparing my insides to their outsides, I see this, or it could be a great marriage. Someone's got this, you know, like the supermodel wife, or you know, and all this stuff. I don't know shit about anyone. And it was such a reminder. I mean, it was tragic. I mean, the guy, he went to a golf course, or excuse me, a shooting range, out in the valley, and shot himself in the head. Oh, wow. Maybe it was his heart. I think it was his head.
Got a hole in one.
Hey! Zinger! So, that's why.
So yeah. As I'm sitting here listening to you,
yeah,
and the word isn't emotional, it's a question that just keeps popping in my head that I've been wanting to ask you the whole time is, are you a happy person or a sad person?
I'm a mix.
I feel that you, and it's not that it's a front, but I feel that every time, hey, Jimmy, you're very positive, everything's all great. But as I talk to you more and listen more, I feel that there's a sadness in you that people might not know about.
It's a good question. It's I think that I do get sad. I mean, I get depressed. Mm. And but it's not like I'm suicidal or, you know, I've never been in that depressed, you know, where I'd want to hurt myself or anything. It's not like, you know, deep depression.
Right.
I'd say like low grade depression, you know, at times. And, you know, it's just part of life.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know what happy like really even means. Mm. Not that I don't understand the idea of it, but I mean, I'm happy at times, and I mean, I'm feeling good, and
other
times I'm not.
I see things gray. Like I don't see things black and white. Like everything's just gray. Like I'm happy when I laugh. But other than that, like it's just mostly like everything's just gray. Like it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of therapy. I would say jokingly, I've had more therapists than girlfriends.
Yeah. And, I've never
and
been
I spent
to
a, about them. About
I've never been to a therapist or anything. You know, I mean, like Tim, when he was getting married, did you go to a couple therapy before?
Oh yeah, before, during.
It's like insane. Like I wouldn't even fucking marry anyone if I was going to therapy before.
Oh no, I was going to therapy before, during, and after my marriage.
Yeah. Wow.
I think therapy is great. I love it.
If it's a good therapist.
Is it included in your benefits?
Yeah, it is. I'll tell you, when you have after insurance, it's amazing. They know actors are fucked up. So you get, like, so much therapy.
I remember Billy Gardell, star of Mike and Molly. We were on the road together. And he says to me, he goes, AFTRA. He goes, their motto is, hey, we're in business too. Like, that was his fucking... Because AFTRA is very big with, you know, radio shows or anything like that. And then just recently, in the last maybe 10 years, it became bigger in television.
Hmm.
The contracts are less money, but it's still... But before, it was like, I'm paying my fucking AFTRA dues, and I'm never getting a check. Like, let's say, example, I make $60,000 in acting in SAG, and I make $300 in fucking AFTRA for the year. You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But it's changed now.
Yeah, it has.
So they're like, hey, you know, like my agent the other day was like, hey, you got an AFTRA contract for 3 days on this show. You're like, oh, okay. But before it was like, ugh, AFTRA contract. Like the money sucked. But now they're mixed. Anyways, they're SAG AFTRA. But they actually, it's weird. They're mixed.
But they're not.
But they're
weird. Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
It just means now they have one business card.
Right.
I think that's the only
one business card.
Yeah. But I think therapy is great. I mean, I highly recommend it.
Do you incorporate that into your writing and your stand-up?
A little bit.
Yeah. It's funny with me that I, like when I was going through my divorce, I was dabbling. Like I'd go to therapy and then go on stage and talk about, like I was... And then, but one time I guess I delved a little too deep and someone just yelled out, that's so sad. And then like it kind of threw me off after that. I'm like, let me stick to the jokes for a while. So I kind of stopped.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything funny necessarily about just talking about problems on stage. You know, I mean, the idea of, to me, of comedy generally is you want to make people laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Not want them to kill themselves.
Yeah.
You know, like, it can be almost selfish to come up on stage. Like, a lot of comics will say, oh, I use this for my therapy, and I get that idea. But if they're really doing that...
Well, there's a big controversy. There's, there's a big controversy about that. The Comedy Store recently, the comedian... on Joe Rogan's podcast all the time, Ari Shaffir.
Yeah.
He there's a one-armed comic.
I saw that.
Like, he just, she made a joke at him, and he just roasted her for like 20 minutes to the point where like people were like, yo, you need to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was, he did that on his comedy special.
Was that on his special?
Yeah.
That was the controversy.
Yeah.
He made fun of her on a Comedy Central stand-up special.
Oh, my goodness.
And mentioned her first and last name. That's where there was the controversy.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's a little...
Well, so you're out here, you're writing, you know, hopefully your agent's getting you work and all that, and you're going to continue working on something. What are your goals, like, to do in the next 5 to 10 years? Where do you see yourself as a... Because I know you have that... You didn't mention it, which I love, and I watched a lot of them, is that thing you have, like, on YouTube or whatever the fuck it is with your, like, prank show?
Yeah, I do a lot of pranks.
Oh, fucking funny.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I did a lot.
What's the name of that show?
Well... The new show is called Fameless. It's going to be on True TV. I was also a regular on a show called Deal With It, which was on
my buddy Theo Vaughn.
Yeah, right.
Hosted it.
Yeah. Who was great. That was on TBS. And then I was a regular, kind of like a co-star type role almost, turned into, on a show called How We Do It, which was on Friday nights on NBC. And I had my own segment, like a Man on the Street segment. And all of those videos you could see actually on YouTube or my website, Vic Cohen.
No, I thought you shot like a web series that was...
Oh, yes. And then there was a show, there's a web series called Odd Jobs.
Yeah,
and I was like kind of like a host.
Pranking.
Yes.
It was so good.
Yeah, that show was... you could look it up. Just Odd Jobs. I don't know if they put my name.
It was just on YouTube. It was never on Fuse or anything like that.
It was on Break.com.
Okay, Break.com. Okay.
Yeah, that was an awesome time. I had a lot of fun with that.
That's just great.
And a lot of people actually saw that. I mean, I've been recognized from that series, which is really surprising to me. But
Oh, no, it's great. You guys got to look it up.
You know what else I get recognized from is Mobbed.
Yeah. There,
Mobbed was on Fox, and I did a lot. I appeared on camera a lot, and right. There was a hidden camera bit at the front of it that always set up the big flash mob singing scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one online; it's viral. You can look up Mobbed, M-O-B-B-E-D, and Marriage Proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And the clip is like is, you know, I think it's had way over a million, maybe millions of hits.
Right.
But it was weird. I got someone recognized me in like Orange County or something.
Have you?
So I'd left out my own talk show or hidden camera show. That's really where
I see
myself.
Yeah, that's right.
In 5 years. Or on your couch.
Yeah.
Crying.
You like that? You and Tim in therapy
and I do
together?
Need to, yeah, right. And right. And I do need to say your wife is amazing. I just want to point that, you know.
Yes.
One of the things that impressed me the most about you when I met you at the Queen Mary in Long Beach back when you first moved out here was your wife.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, she was there to support you.
Mm-hmm.
She was down there, and you guys made a really great couple. And I could see, you know, how much you guys loved each other and how much she loves you.
Yeah.
You know,
I love her to death. She is crazy. I just wrote a joke about her the other day. I ran it by Tim. And I told her, and she goes, it's funny. it's about distracting the monster. It's about, like, how mad she gets about something. And she's like, you fucking ass, I can't believe it. I'm going back to New York. And then I'm like, here's some shoes. Oh, shoes. Like, it just... Nice.
Which I gotta say,
like,
ooh,
she just...
Candy.
You know what I mean? It's ADD, distract the monster. Man.
Well, you live in a very... where you live, I'm not gonna say where, but... And that where your studio is, is like... Where your studio is located is insane. You are right across from... This is what I love about it, is you're right across from Urgent Care. Which I'm a bit of a hypochondriac.
Oh,
I would be there all the time. You're like, hey, Vic. And you're right by the mall. So that would kill you with your wife.
My benefits give me, I get urgent care at Cedars-Sinai for free. So I don't even go to my regular doctor. I just go to urgent care and it's free. I don't pay for anything. But if I go to the urgent care right here, it's $50.
I just went, okay,
everything's completely covered.
I was in between insurance, and I had a Cobra plan, which I chose not
right.
to whatever, it's boring stuff.
The python.
But yeah, right. Okay, so it's like two weeks ago. I'm really excited. I'm making something at home. I love eating out. I'm eating out all the time. I'm single. Blah blah blah. So I'm really impressed with myself. I'm eating this Kroger's brand orange roughy that's been in my freezer for 3 years. I cook it, make it flaky, buttery. Suddenly, I got a fucking fishbone caught in my throat.
Oh, jeez.
You ever had one of those?
Sure.
It's horrible. Can come out. Like, it's stuck.
Because it gets sideways. It scares the shit
so
out of you.
So, I had to go to Cedars. No insurance.
Wow.
That, and here I'm thinking, like, you know, and this is great. I'm being smart. I'm not spending tons of money all the time. I'm going to eat at home. It's going to be a really nice, affordable little meal. $1,000. That's what I'm paying. Oh. That fucking fish. I'm so pissed.
I mean, so how many days did you have it in there?
This is the best part. So I go in there, and they fast track me. Now, when they fast track you, you're like, oh shit, this might be serious. Mm-hmm. Like, I might fucking die. What a way to go, you know? So then they're gonna call. They want to stick a tube through my nose down my throat to look at it. And there's no fucking way. You know, that's basically how they pump people's stomachs.
Like that,
if they go all the way down.
Only dicks go in your mouth.
only dicks go in my nose.
Up your nose. So that's why it's called dick nose.
Right. So, anyways, it took a long time for they're going to get a nose. And then I'm like, no. And they're like, okay, we'll get an ear, nose, and throat guy. He'll do it. By the time it took before anyone were to come, it dislodged on its own.
Oh, wow.
So I never got the hose up the nose.
Did you have to pay the
but
thousand?
I got hosed by the bill. You know, $1,000.
Damn.
Thank
you, Urgent Care.
All I had to do was just shake you a little bit. Right.
So I can't believe it. Is there any?
Damn it, Jim! I'm a doctor.
So, is there anything you want to plug on the show? Is there social media? Is there a Twitter? Facebook?
Oh yeah, yeah. Thank you for asking. You know, Vic Cohen at Vic Cohen, VicCohen. That's my obviously Twitter, and then on Facebook you can always find me. I'm doing a belly room show coming up. Should I say a date or this is
whatever,
so timeless?
Whatever, you can say. No, it goes up in about a week
June
or two.
June 27th. It's going to be, at the 2018.
Comedy Store Belly Room.
15. Comedy Store Belly. It's going to be a lot of fun, 7:30. And, check out the podcast.
To Vic Cohen, and you can Google that or YouTube it, and you'll see a ton of, and it's Cohen.
Yeah, and also
not like the Cohen brothers.
That's exactly right. And the other thing is, we didn't really touch on this much, I don't think, but Howie Mandel and I are in a documentary together. He made a documentary about me, which started in '98, as I think we talked about earlier. It's going to festivals right now. It was just in Toronto about a month ago. There's a really fun trailer online. All you got to do is Google the word committed, C-O-M-M-I-T-T-E-D, with Hot Docs, H-O-T-D-O-C-S. That's the festival. It was at in Toronto just, you know, not too long ago. It's a really great trailer. I'll show you about the
slash
film.
Dude, that's so
just
long.
No, all you got to do is look Vic Cohen and the word Hot Docs and committed. You'll find it. You'll find the trailer, and it's great. I mean, it's really exciting.
No, I'm definitely going to look at it. I always enjoy it. I mean, you're very engaging. You really have a thing. It's funny because my wife, she when she sees you, she's always like, she's like, she goes, I really like him. He's really, and she's like, she's like, is he hitting on me? She goes, I really like him. She was upset that she couldn't see you. She left at 11. She had to go to
before I go
to the doctor, but anyways,
tell her
I will, of course. Well, we'll get together.
I was not hitting on her.
No,
that's scary to me because I wonder, like, is that the perception I'm giving? Like, do you guys have you felt like I've been hitting on either? Because Tim,
not
I have been.
Not enough.
We're gonna do a three-way. You're gonna be my wingman and hook me up with all those girls you're getting with your sweet talking on Tinder or wherever.
There's a couple things I like to ask my people. You are at an age where you are not settled down with a girl, but you were. Masturbation is big thing in my life. Woody's, Tim's, you know, porn. You're looking at porn often?
I don't look at porn.
You don't? Some people don't.
No, I literally do not. I mean, it is a big deal for me, and I consciously do not look at porn.
Okay. Why?
I think porn is a really unhealthy thing for me. I don't want to judge others, but
it's an addiction.
I think, well, I'm not saying it's an addiction. I'm just saying that I think it, I think it's one of the biggest problems facing men, and particularly younger guys. Mm. There's been science behind it. High-speed internet, what someone, a guy will look at in one sitting, is more naked women than a caveman would see in a lifetime. Wow. And that's in, like, you know, I'm talking like a short
Interesting.
Sitting. And that, the mind, in my mind, the brain, the science is behind this. The brain wasn't meant for that. You know, every time we look at, as a man, I look at a pornographic image, I'm being a straight guy, I look at a woman, I get a dopamine rush. That's how God meant it, or whoever created us, or however we got here. We get dopamine rushes when we eat food. We get it when we drink. And that's because we need to eat. And we get it from sex because we need the ideas we want it to procreate. Mm-hmm. But if I'm using porn to medicate or to get a hit, and I'm through lifting my dopamine levels, I'm not using what it was intended for. Besides of which, I find that it gets in the way of intimacy. Mm. If I want to really meet a woman and get to know her, I want to know her as a whole individual. I don't want to be tainted by porn images, you know, women being just abused on camera. I just don't, that's just not going to work for me. It doesn't help. You know, I'm not a teenage boy.
Of course. Yeah. I'm still going to jerk off. I just want to let you know. But you know what?
Just don't do it at the table.
You know, it's funny. Every once in a while.
While I'm in the bathroom.
Every once in a while when I have my wife in the other room, she might be sleeping, and I'm masturbating in the dark like a caveman. I think to myself, what a piece of shit loser I am. I do. Every once in a while. Do you guys ever feel like, what the fuck? Why am I jerking off?
Yeah, but then I fall asleep and forget about it anyway.
So. No, but it's true. If you're being honest with what you just said, that it really makes a lot of sense. I actually feel
I'm
that
being honest.
When I masturbate, I'm cheating on my wife.
I'm usually already looking in the mirror. So.
Yeah.
Well, here's...
I feel like I'm cheating.
Well, then why do you do it?
Because we're married 13 years and she doesn't have sex as much as I want to have sex.
But then,
you know what I mean?
But there are ways. Why not bring that to her and have a conversation about it? I mean,
of course.
Or find intimacy
therapy.
In other ways.
You want me to go to
no,
therapy.
No. What I'm suggesting is instead of retreating to the caveman,
right?
Maybe it's an opportunity to get closer,
right?
To have those conversations.
Well, that makes sense.
You know, I mean,
sense.
Also, I feel like if I were you already said I didn't put this in your mouth or head that you kind of feel like you're cheating.
Yeah,
that's you. So what is going on? What are you cheating? Obviously, there's something going on that makes you feel like you're cheating. You're not giving something to your wife, or maybe it's the secrecy. I don't know, but that's not going to help your self-esteem.
You know, it's I got a cramp.
And there he goes to masturbate. It's funny. You talk about masturbation. You really do have a problem. The guy literally just got up.
Oh, my God. He just came in his pants.
He literally got up. It's not even a joke. I mean, that is... you work with him. Is this common? He just jumps up and says, I got to take a shit? Who does this?
I got to mop it up later.
Yeah, I mean, forget about a therapist. You need a gastroenterologist. He's got shit dripping down his leg right now. Oh, is that dripping down your leg?
You got that bag in the car?
Holy crap.
So anyways.
The guy literally shit himself. I've never seen this.
No, I got a cramp.
Diaper check.
Dude, was that a shit or a cramp?
No, it was a cramp.
But then you got up and said, I got to take a shit. Or did you just say shit? Oh, you said shit.
I got a cramp.
I totally misunderstood.
You need a man pong?
So there's a couple things I like to ask my people. So you don't masturbate, what would your porn star name be?
Well, I mean, I hate to not play along. I would just have to go with... I would say Vic Bone. Instead of Vic
Bone.
Cohen.
Vic Bone.
Vic Cohen. Vic Bowen.
Bone.
Vic Bone.
I give you a challenge to go a month without looking at porn.
Wow. You know, I've tried that before. I've tried that. What,
Moving on.
30 seconds.
Being out here in Hollywood, what would your man crush be? Like, mine's Brad Pitt, and Tim's is Hilary Swank.
And I'm Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen, for real.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I don't even have to hesitate on this. I don't even have to think. It would be also a Brad, or Bradley Cooper. Yeah,
is
I like...
Is handsome man?
He's very good looking. He's, He's not hyper effeminate. Mm. He's manly. yet I could see that.
It seems like a down to earth guy.
Yeah, he's my man crush.
We were on Sex in the City together, me and Bradley Cooper.
While we're talking about our man
crush. Wait, can I just say something? How out of shape is he? Oh, seriously, wait, let me just say something. Like, I get it when, like
pull the muscles
like,
doing a
the guy's sitting on his fucking ass. You know, like, I get it when it's like, what's his face? I was just watching the playoffs, and what's the guy in Cleveland? He pulled a cab, right? And he fought through it, right? He's an NBA player. He's like six whatever, uh-huh. seven. This guy sitting on his fucking ass. I mean, he does nothing all day, he's like dying.
He was actually doing Kegels.
You need to hit a gym. I saw one out when I walked in.
Dude,
I mean,
me and my wife just did a big long walk. We actually walked
instead
like
of
two,
looking
two
at porn.
Last
do
night.
Some fucking sit-ups or something. Right. Oh my god.
So that's funny. Bradley Cooper or Brad Pitt? Yeah. Excellent. So what would your favorite swear word be?
Well, it's horrible because I just saw. Louis, so you know, do that thing of his bit about cunt, and I don't know if you ever saw him talking
about.
But yeah, and I do love that word because one of the things about the word, and I mean it's horrible. I know women. If you're listening, I don't mean to offend you. It's just, you know, I think like sometimes if you get really angry, you go like, cunt, she's a cunt, like, you know, like there can be like 100 U's in there. There's so many opportunities. But
well, that's a unisex word to me now. I feel like guys are more.
I like that, true. Yeah, that's a great point.
My wife used to call me that.
A cunt?
That or twat.
Yeah, but I would never.
My wife calls me that every once in a
while. I would never call anyone that in real life. Like, I wouldn't say to a woman, you're, you know.
Yeah.
I did call my wife that once, and she goes, "Is that all you got?" I go, "Yeah, pretty much." I don't know.
Tim was called a girl a cunt, some Latin girl.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He goes, "You're a cunt!" Like, and he really emphasized, like, "You're a cunt!" And she didn't really understand the language too well. She's like, "What is that?" What? He's like, "What the fuck?" Took all the power away from the word.
That's the thing. No. That's the thing about, like, in my fantasy, I'm going to be with, I love the idea of being with a foreign woman. And, you know, but the problem is if they don't understand English.
Well, we've all seen that episode of Seinfeld.
You know, it just doesn't work. Like, if it's a comic, you want him to get
that
the
episode
joke.
Where Seinfeld says cunt, yes.
Being with a foreign woman, and George, I want to dip my bald head in oil.
Yeah, I know.
All over your body.
That's so fucking
yes?
funny. So what is the swear word? What are we going
well,
with?
I like the cunt word, but with a K.
Cunt that, with a K.
It's trying to be
that's
cute.
That's very Nazi-ish. Cunt!
Isn't that a cereal?
I like the word fuck a lot, actually. I would say that's my favorite word.
A lot of people pick the word fuck. They do.
Yeah, it's a great word.
Say
it's got the cuss.
Say
just
it
like,
five times to, are we going with cunt or fuck?
Let's go with fuck, Alec.
Go with fuck. And say it five times to Howie Mandel.
No, I'm not doing that.
Exciting. No, you're excited. No, not you're not disrespecting him. You're just excited.
You're endearing him
to tell him about something that happened.
Holy fuck! Howie, I'm on Jimmy's show. Fuck Howie. Now I can't shake hands. fuck! Why won't you shake my hand? I've known you for long enough.
He knows where it's been.
Uh-huh. Fuck. 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 Fuck, Howie. Fuck. I'm thinking about you now. I'm so happy to think about the work we've done. All I can say is fuck. That's really creepy.
That's it for the Brooklyn Buddha podcast. Tim, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Woody.
I'm creeped out.
Adios.
Vic Cohen. Love
Jim,
you, buddy.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you so
Thanks
much,
so
brother.
Much for having me. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Great to meet you and Woody.
Charmed.
Love to meet you too. Love
Thank
to meet
you.
Thank you.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here. Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.